I'm Dan Catchpole, reporter of the News Data's Clearing Up and host of the Energy West podcast. Artificial intelligence has gone from sci-fi to right now with things like ChatGPT and AI image generators. And while artificial intelligence has actually been around for longer than most of us realize, it existed in far narrower applications. Today, we've entered the era of generative AI. It's an incredible technology capable of turning once incomprehensibly large tasks into manageable, even mundane ones. But that takes a lot of energy, and demand for AI is growing faster than new renewable energy resources are coming onto the grid. The big tech companies enabling AI's expansion in the electric power industry operate in very different worlds. One is known for its move fast and break things ethos, and the other is one of the most heavily regulated and risk-averse industries in the United States. Booming demand for computing power has made them into odd bedfellows. And while they continue getting to know each other better, they still have lots more to learn if they're going to figure out how to supply data centers' seemingly endless appetite for energy. Ben Lee, a computer scientist at the University of Pennsylvania, is one of a handful of people in the country who operate in the space between the electric power industry and big tech. He and I talked about the challenges and opportunities that lay before the two industries. For more on this topic, check out NewsData's special report on artificial intelligence and the electric power industry at newsdata.com.
Welcome to News Data's Energy West, a podcast about the energy industry today and where it's going tomorrow.
I'm here with Ben Lee from the University of Pennsylvania to talk about artificial intelligence. Ben, thanks for joining us on News Data's Energy West. Could you just first tell listeners like a little bit about the research that you do and you know, what your role at UPenn is?
Yeah, great. Thanks so much for having me on. So as you said, I'm a professor here at UPenn, and I have appointments in the electrical engineering department as well as the computer science department. My area of focus is really on microprocessor design, what we call computer architecture, the design of processors and memory systems and increasingly servers and data centers. My particular focus among these topics has been for a very long time, power efficiency and thermal management. How do you make sure that when you design your processors and then manage them in the field, that they translate power into performance and they're as power efficient as possible? So that's what we've been working on for the last 15, 20 years. And it's certainly an interesting time to be thinking about these questions in the context of data centers and AI.
Yeah, and you're not the type of guest we usually have on to Energy West. First of all, could you just kind of explain to our listeners why people in the utility industry need to be talking and listening to folks like yourself?
Well, I think we're seeing a lot of discussion nowadays about AI and its role in our society. And there's certainly rightly a lot of excitement about the applications and use cases, ChatGPT and the uses of these forms of AI. But I think what is perhaps less known is the massive amounts of infrastructure required to support that computation in data centers. And data centers are increasingly being deployed throughout the United States and connecting to the grid. And these grid operators are discovering that it's fairly difficult to supply the levels of electricity and to supply energy to these data centers to support their compute. So I think there needs to be a much more conversation back and forth between computer systems, computer architects who are thinking about building these large systems, and then the grid operators that are making investments for our future in renewable energy and energy storage and so on.
You are, I mean, this is your day in, day out. This is what you do, right? So what is, what's on your radar these days? What are you most interested in, most focused on? However you want to answer that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, first of all, as a computer scientist, I am very excited about the potential of AI. I play with GPT. I've been exploring ways where language models can help improve my own personal productivity and so on. So I think this is a really interesting time. It reminds me of where computer science was in the late 90s when search engines came out, and there was a lot of, and the internet came out, and there was a lot of potential yet to be realized. So I feel like we're in that moment. And it's incredibly exciting as a computer scientist.
I can imagine.
I think also a lot about, as I mentioned at the beginning, power efficiency and semiconductors and how we build processors that serve all of these massive demands for compute. And just a little bit of a technical detail here, we've become accustomed to rapidly advancing computer systems, the benefits of Moore's Law and so on. Turns out that Moore's Law has slowed by quite a bit. So we're seeing this massive demand for compute come online just as we're seeing a slowing in transistor scaling and semiconductor trends. So how do we build systems that can meet this demand and supply the right level of compute? And then finally, increasingly, we're thinking a lot about the sustainability of all of these efforts, right? So are we supplying our compute with renewable energy, with carbon-free energy? How do we do that and so on? And that's another big part of where my mind is right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is certainly an exciting time for the utility industry as well in terms of the development of AI and what it means. I would say exciting in a different way. There's a little bit of fear and trepidation, perhaps, and uncertainty. Yes. I mean, that said, you know, that's from the demand side. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of interest and excitement about what AI can do for utilities. So in terms of that, what you said about Moore's Law, you know, there's a lot of uncertain projections around the growing of demand. I know one thing that we talked about previously was you're talking about the disconnect between development of new resources and demand for this computing. And that, I suppose, is, you know, becomes that much more acute when you're talking about the efficiency gains are slowing down. So we kind of just need more raw computing power to meet this escalating demand. So can you talk about that disconnect and I guess where you see, what do you see the pain points for the electricity energy sector's ability to keep up with that demand growth?
Right. So I think historically when chips got faster and transistors got smaller, they also ended up using less power. So over the last few decades, we've seen incredible increases in performance, but we haven't seen necessarily a massive increase in power. Put another way, computing has gone up by orders and orders of magnitude over decades. Power usage has not gone up by the same amount, because we would have noticed it by now. Yeah. So that's in many ways thanks to advances in semiconductors. Those advances have come to a stop. So now we're going to see this growing gap where as we deploy larger and larger data centers, as we put more and more CPUs and GPUs into them, they will draw proportionally much more power. And the question is, well, we are also concerned on the computer systems side that the grid might not be able to keep up because they're building renewable energy generation, building transmission lines and all the associated infrastructure that is required, that has not been nearly keeping at the same pace as what we've seen in compute. Just one set of numbers we've seen, we were looking at data from the EIA, the United States Energy Information Administration, and they were saying that renewable installations have been growing by 7% per year on average over the last 5 or 6 years, maybe that's 8 or 9%, something like that. But when we look at the growth in data center capacity, the same number is 25%. The size of the data centers, wow, the amount of power that they're drawing is growing at 25% per year. So this is compounding year after year, these growth rates. So we have a gap, and that gap is getting larger.
Yeah, and it strikes me though that energy, when utilities do demand forecasts, they, you know, these kind of these new factors, these new demands, electrification of transportation, decarbonization of buildings, data centers, they're just starting to show up in the demand forecasts.
And what, from your perspective, you know, you talk to big tech companies that are in this sector, you talk to energy folks. Yeah. Is there a way to get those two talking together more productively, more efficiently? Do you have any advice for them, I guess?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. I think I'll give you an example of something we've seen happen in the, that could, might be improved upon. I think, for example, this notion of curtailments and the issues that we see when renewable energy gets deployed at in larger and larger amounts. We've seen this data from California and potentially elsewhere. And the issue is that there simply isn't enough flexibility in demand to line up with the variance in supply. People typically think about this in the context of, and certainly many of your listeners may be familiar with this because they work in the industry, but this notion of having to turn off your wind and solar farms because you simply don't have anywhere for those electrons to go. You don't have corresponding demand. That has been extraordinarily difficult. And I gather that some of the conversations with data center companies are about, well, you've got lots of flexibility. Let's scale up and scale down so that you can better match your consumption with what we've got available on the grid. And so I think there's a tendency for both sides to assume that the other side has it easier in terms of there are solutions that you could implement more quickly. And let's try to, if I'm on the demand side, I'll try to fix it on the supply side by investing in more renewable energy. And if I'm on the supply side, I might go to my consumers and tell them, oh, you can just be a little bit more flexible about your consumption. But I think we need to sort of co-optimize or coordinate the optimization and figure out how to get the cooperation working better.
Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, to that point, what is the, in a nutshell, what is the business case or the economics driving how data centers operate, right? I mean, it's not like they have peak hours, right? They're running fairly consistently.
That's right. And I think that's the difficulty in any sort of demand response discussion around data centers today. There was a seminal study published by Google in 2007 that said, well, you've already paid for the data center. You've paid all these infrastructure costs. You've already paid for the power. You've already paid for all of the servers inside the machine. So financially, it makes sense to maximize your utilization of all of that infrastructure. And in practice, what that means is you're running all the time at 100%, 24/7. So there aren't these natural variations in power usage that you might expect in compute. Instead, computational jobs are being scheduled so that if there were any valleys in utilization, any valleys in power usage, they would get filled in with other types of computation. It used to be that people would think, well, people check their emails in the morning, people would check their social media feeds at night, and then we will see those peaks accordingly. There are those diurnal activity patterns, those daily access patterns for various internet services, but they don't translate into power usage at data center scale. Data centers are just running at maximum power all the time.
So wait, what it sounds like you're saying, like even if like that diurnal kind of peaks and valleys, or say like you come home and you're watching something on a streaming service, those other during the valleys when there's not that kind of routine driven demand, they have other demand ready to fill in and to use any excess computing power.
That's right, exactly. So we typically think about computation in two classes: interactive jobs, interactive computation, like serving your search query or providing you images on your Instagram feed or whatever. that's all interactive. But then there's the batch or offline side of things. So training your machine learning workloads in the background, or doing some database analytics in the background. And essentially, those jobs will be sitting there waiting to be scheduled. And as machines, as you say, as machines become available, they're going to come in and sort of consume those spare machine resources and then drive up power usage.
Generally speaking, I realize this broad brushstroke here, but the electricity usage is one of the major costs, right, for a data center. So how interested is a business going to be in or responsive to in time of use pricing if or demand response pricing? I mean, is that just something that financially is feasible as a way to better fit data centers into the overall grid demand that a utility is trying to balance?
Potentially, yes. I think the few cases I've seen where there have been incentives to do demand response, the incentives haven't been large enough. The financial incentives haven't been large enough to move the needle. And to calibrate, I think the question is, if you wanted to reduce, if you had a 40 megawatt data center and somehow you suddenly wanted to modulate down to 39 megawatts, shave a megawatt of power off of demand, you would have to quantify sort of how much less revenue you're going to be generating by providing less relevant advertising on a search engine query or one of these social media feeds and so on. So that part of it is quantifiable. And then you have the incentives coming from the grid operator for cutting off that 1 megawatt or whatever that we're talking about. So there are numbers that you can compare on how much the size of the incentive and the size of the opportunity cost for computing with that extra megawatt. I don't think the incentives are large enough to offset the cost at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it is remarkable just how many variables this demand is coming on so fast and so large, and it's really new. It's really, we're all learning, and there are just so many variables driving it. Right. So one thing it seems like there in terms of that disconnect is kind of the time scale for utilities planning. They're doing projections. They're looking at what demand they know is coming. That's kind of baked in that they, you know, a company has said, we're going to build this factory here in 5 years. Mm-hmm. And 5-10 years out, more, you know, theoretical demand. That's not really, they're not going out and investing in resources for that. But it takes time to bring on new generation and, you know, you got to raise the money, et cetera. How long does it take a company to make a decision about, you know, okay, we're going to build a new data center here? And it seems like that time scale is a lot shorter than the time needed to, you know, say we need to add 100 megawatts of wind and a 50 megawatt battery system that has, you know, 8 hours dispatchable.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that the timescales are very different. I think certainly the construction of the data center itself and the extent to which semiconductor supply chains might determine how quickly you can pack the data center with servers, I think that determines things. But I think a lot of this physical infrastructure that's being built for the data center is ultimately software managed. And so you can deploy 100,000 servers and very quickly get a lot of computation deployed on those servers because you have all the software and instrumentation you needed from all the other data centers you were running. And it's just a question of loading and shifting load to the right machines in the right data center. So I would definitely agree with you that that's an excellent point, that the rate of data center construction is likely to outpace, or the speed of it is likely to outpace anything we can do for transmission lines and renewable energy generation. I would also say that maybe data centers don't have to deal with the permitting issues that we sometimes hear about.
No, yeah, certainly not. What are you talking about? Permitting a new transmission line? That's a breeze. One thing that DOE is working on is developing, using AI to streamline permitting. So hopefully. Hopefully AI can crack that nut. It seems to me that a company building a data center, they want to maintain the flexibility of business decisions, right? They don't want to say, you know, to close that, to kind of find some, I guess, parity between those two timelines. Google isn't going to want to say to a commit now to say, we're going to build a data center in your territory 7 years from now, right? I mean, they want to maintain that independence. I mean, do you see a way to better align those timelines?
Well, I think there's an interesting question about, I think, how data centers negotiate with utility providers about the energy purchases, these power purchase agreements, and these green tariffs that Google talks about, or these renewable energy certificates that are being generated. The question is whether or not whether or not there could be financial instruments that could decouple or align align when new energy sources come online and how they are consumed by data centers on the grid. So financially, that could, or these contract agreements might be able to do something there. But I think increasingly increasingly site selection and where data centers decide to put, where data center operators decide to put these new facilities accounts for, I think, the availability of renewable energy or the availability of energy, period, and the receptiveness of the local communities and the grid to sort of accommodate those facilities.
Yeah, and it seems to me from reporting I've done, including talking to you previously, that some of the biggest constraints on the spread of AI might be just the physical constraints, which I find a little ironic that, you know, there's the constraint on this new digital technology is going to be just how fast can we make the necessary chips, how much land is available, how much energy is available.
That's right, because I think there's so many possible use cases for AI that it's the Wild West right now. Everyone is good going out there and trying to stake out their claim to some new application of this fundamental technology. And it's hard to know how things will play out. But certainly one thing we do know is that the training costs for these large models are very large and are growing. We also think that there could be optimizations coming down the pipeline that can make things more efficient. But training will continue to be a big part of it. Inference, or allowing a trained model to actually respond to queries from users, that part of it is highly uncertain. It really depends on how quickly people decide to adopt the technology into their everyday lives, into how they work and play. So, and that's uncertain. I think what you see are these data center companies anticipating this growth and building out all the infrastructure needed to serve it. But yeah, we're heavily constrained by very physical issues here.
Yeah, and I mean, it really seems that demand in this case is certainly the one unlimited factor, demand for applications of AI. Is it, we talked about Moore's Law earlier, what are the possibilities from your perspective, from what you've seen, of AI being used to find efficiencies in data processing and computing?
I think it's possible to come up with more efficient hardware. I think we've seen some of that in NVIDIA's recent announcements of their new GPU architecture. They are more energy efficient for training. We also see advances not only in the hardware but also in the software. I think the software increasingly is talking about fine-tuning models rather than building massive models from scratch. Mm-hmm. And I think that will end up using a lot less energy. I'm fairly optimistic about efficiency improvements because computer science has been fairly good at taking an initial design and then polishing it up, and then after years and years, producing a very shiny ball at the end, right? So I think the polishing iteratively, incrementally over years will produce effectively an AI that can give us really good answers, but also consume much less compute than they do today. I mean, the last thing I'll say, I think, is that the concern about the hardware side is that we don't have the semiconductor scaling that we used to have. So the trends that we relied on to get more energy efficient hardware, to constrain the power usage of that hardware, is not really sustainable moving forward. So that will have implications for how much power data centers will need to use. And that's a concern. So if we don't have those semiconductors getting more power efficient, we will rely more heavily on intelligent design, coming up with fancier processor designs that can give us those energy efficiencies.
Well, I know one thing that Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm recently announced when she was out here in Seattle, actually in February, was working with industry to use AI to improve and develop new materials. I suppose this is somewhat of a crystal ball question, but so I'm not going to ask you to predict the future in terms of what new breakthrough materials AI is going to develop for semiconductors, but is there the possibility that we can, a realistic possibility that we can come up with new materials to find more efficient, develop more efficient processing semiconductor chips than we could even, that we even are aware of right now?
Is there I think so.
Hail Mary breakthrough potential.
I think we're likely to see AI produce surprising outcomes. I think that much is guaranteed. Predicting which sector of the industry that's going to come from is going to be, I think, a lot harder. I know that in our area, in our field, we have a lot of people thinking about how to automatically design chips or automatically write software programs with AI. And we've seen some advances there. And that will allow us to more quickly identify energy efficient designs. I know that there are other researchers thinking about how to better optimize battery chemistries and exploring all the different ways those chemistries could work out in order to produce better, more dense batteries and energy storage. So there's certainly a lot of research activity across all of these fronts where I think people are thinking about how AI can help them accelerate the rate of discovery. Figure out which of these industries will actually hit the finish line first is much harder. But I'm fairly optimistic that you're going to see breakthroughs, whether it be in drug discovery, battery chemistry, hardware, software design, something like that.
Yeah. How much time do you spend when you're like out socializing, talking people down off the ledge about AI? Or maybe, I don't know, maybe you just hang out. I mean, you just hear so much, so many stories about it. You know, I mean, there's plenty of unknowns worried about.
Sometimes you think about the dust up that surrounded OpenAI recently and this notion of whether or not they were pursuing AI or commercializing AI in a responsible fashion, right? I think there's a lot of discussion about trustworthy and responsible AI. I think that's mostly in the context of like mission critical sectors like autonomous vehicles, like medical devices. There, we definitely need to think very carefully before we put autonomous systems into these mission criticals. I would put, by the way, energy system to that mix as well. I wouldn't trust the grid to AI optimization either without some heavy human oversight. But this notion, I think, that AI will somehow take over the world or produce some catastrophic endgame, I'm not quite there. And I think most computer scientists, most of my colleagues here at Penn are not quite there either. They're thinking more just about trustworthy AI and how to get more explainable AI so that people will adopt it more easily. I think there are lots of barriers, lots of skepticism, and we need to improve trustworthiness.
All right. Well, Ben, thank you very much for your time. I gotta say, it's always fascinating talking to you. Any last thoughts that you want to leave us with before I let you go? Or anything people should be listening to or thinking about?
Yeah, I'll just conclude briefly with where we started, which is that I think this is an incredibly exciting time for AI. I think in the near term, there will be fairly significant challenges that probably existed even before AI burst into the scene surrounding renewable energy and the sustainability of the grid and all of that. And AI has just come along and made things a lot more intense, a lot more difficult. And I want to recognize that. But at the same time, I also feel like this is an really exciting time. I think 10 years from now, our lives will have been transformed by AI in a fairly positive way. And it's just a question of giving the technology a little bit more room to run, because I'm a computer scientist. So I'm hoping that we're not constrained by these physical aspects, or if we are, we can try to figure out how to mitigate many of the impacts on the physical world. A lot of this, as I said, means thinking about how AI uses more renewable energy, how it can schedule and be more flexible about how it computes, and then making sure that we deliver its capabilities in an energy efficient and, as I said, sustainable way.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Dan. It was a pleasure having this conversation with you.